You are now listening to the hottest true crime podcast in the streets.
Hello. Welcome to another episode of Affirmative Murder, the Equal Opportunity True Crime Comedy Podcast. I'm Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner in true crime, Francelle Evans.
Oh yes, wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Yeah, man, I'm the mailman, can't you tell, man? Gonna post it.
What up?
Fran, ¿cómo estás, man? How you doing?
Doing pretty good, man. Just chilling. I had a couple days off.
Nice.
About to go back to work on Tuesday. So, but about to be back to the old grind, man. Other than that, same old, same old. What's up with you?
Good, man. I've just been, ordering stuff, prepping for Austin Tejas in less than a month or so. You know, we're taking the podcast on the road, headed to Austin for Crime Con. Very excited for that. I know that you have a fear of flying.
Oh, absolutely.
But other than that, are you getting psyched up? You ready to, you know, go, you know, Chris Hansen is going to be there. You like, I'm excited to get you. My biggest goal is to get you on a stage doing, I want to do a karaoke night and I want to get you on the stage singing something.
In where?
In Austin.
In like a bar?
Yeah, like at a bar.
Oh, that's fine with that. I don't know anybody there. So that's
okay. I see you say that now. I'm going to hold you to that you said that it's like, okay, whatever. Okay, yeah. Cool. So the
get
night
of. Drinks on me? Oh, yeah.
Okay,
oh,
cool. Most definitely. Okay, all right, well, cool. I mean, we can make that happen.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Okay. So I'm excited. I think it's going to be a great time. So I've just been getting like, you know, banners and equipment. So with the podcast and stuff like that. So just in preparation. And so that's really where my head has been at, just to make sure, you know, I'm very much like, it's really like, My Favorite Murder, Georgia from My Favorite Murder, there was an episode where she was talking about the definition of a perfectionist, and like everybody thinks a perfectionist is just like, oh, well, like, you know, I just try to work my ass off and kick ass. And it's like, she's like, that's not what a perfectionist is. A perfectionist is like somebody that fixates so much on trying to get something right that a lot of times they don't even end up doing the thing because they're just like, it's not going to be how I want it to be.
So why waste my time?
And me, I'm trying to like, I've been talking to other podcasters that I know that have done Crime Con before and just trying to get advice because I'm trying to get out of the mind state of like, I'm trying to go and like win.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to go and like be the best podcast at Crime Con.
I don't know. Yeah.
But so I'm trying to get out of that mind state, and it's a hard mind state for me to get out of like in a lot of aspects in my life. Like,
well, you could be a competitive person sometimes.
Yeah, but this is like not a competition. So I'm trying to like,
but still, you can still be competitive and not
sure,
be a competition.
Yes, that's true. But I fixate and I'm always trying to like figure out how to beat the other person. Even if it's like that's not what this is about. So I'm trying to work on that just and outside of in every aspect of my life. And I'm trying to take this as an opportunity to just go have a good time, meet people and not be like, okay, are we like the best booth?
Yeah.
But which we aren't going to be because like Nancy Grace is going and like other huge podcasts and stuff.
If anything, Nancy Grace is going to be there.
Yeah. why would you take those children? Why? Crime Con 2021. See you guys there if you're going and, you know, see you guys on
is
the stream.
Is anybody saying they were going? I don't know.
I've gotten some messages about meetups and stuff. Like, I don't know if they're going to Crime Con, but there are people that listen that live in Austin are going to be in town. I'm like, yeah, like let's do a karaoke night.
Mm.
One message that I said to a person was though, as two men, I need to let people know that we have a responsibility that if you come out with us and you drink, if you don't live in Austin, like you need to have somewhere to stay. I don't want anybody getting in a car and driving back to Dallas, Texas or something and like you came to see us.
Yeah.
Because if something happens to you, that's going to be on my conscience.
Mm-hmm.
So I want people to come have a good time. But if you are you driving from far away to do that, please have like arrangements to stay somewhere safe. I don't want anybody driving drunk or something like that.
Yeah.
Not saying we're going to turn up and it's going to be crazy, but
we
like,
are.
I'm going to go play. I'm going to go do karaoke. And when I do karaoke, I get faded.
Well, first of all, what's up with this karaoke thing, man? Because this is not the first time you mentioned it.
I want to do karaoke in Austin.
Like a duo?
No. Just have you never been to a karaoke bar?
Yeah, but I mean, you could do karaoke as a duo.
I'm sure. I don't know the rules of the bar. I haven't picked a bar.
I'm not
bar
doing it by myself. That I can't.
Oh, see, no. See, I knew you were gonna try to add shit. No, see, I knew you were gonna try to add shit. No, you already went nonchalant, friend. Oh man, whatever, man. I'll go up there, get some drinks in me. No, you no. That's how karaoke works. It's your turn. What? You pick your song. You go up there. You sing Candy or whatever.
Candy. No.
Yeah, I don't know. I figure I'm picturing you singing like a 70s classic. Because you got to know all the words. Even though they're going to have they're gonna have the words there, but you got to pick a song that like you know and you love.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Come on, you know, it's no duet, we'll see. Man. We'll see. If they allow you to do duets and we find a song that we both gel with, I don't just sing any songs.
We just go there and sing anything.
Well, no, there's rules.
You're brother. Come on, man.
That's what I tell him. I'm a brother, man. Like, just let me. They'd be like, sir, you need to get the fuck out of a karaoke a go-go. This Austin, Texas bar. You need to get out of karaoke a go-go. I don't know what you're a brother means. That doesn't make you just you can do whatever you want. No, no, man. You can't change the rules, man. You said you were gonna go up there. Come on. Oh, that's why I said we'll get it figured out. I know it's gonna be more of a challenge. That's why I just accept that you said that shit.
Yeah.
You said it all nonchalant. Mm-hmm. I know you.
Yeah.
So. We'll get it figured out. That's why it's my big goal.
Yeah.
I don't appreciate I let you mislead the fans like that by just being like, oh, whatever, man. Get me drinks and I'm good to go. I was like, no, it's not going to be that easy, but I'll move on. And now you already didn't flip flop. Yeah. But we'll
see.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
maybe,
we'll see.
Maybe not.
But
no,
my PSA still stands. Like I said, if you want to come and hang out and go do karaoke with us or whatever, that's great. I want to meet all the people that support this show and listen to this podcast and have allowed us to even go on this amazing trip. But if you don't live in Austin, Texas, I need you to have somewhere to stay at the end of the day. And we got to make sure, like, you know, your Uber comes and all that stuff. We got to make sure people get to where they need to get to and are not just driving into the night unsafely.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my only rule. If you want to do a meetup, if you want to go with us to do karaoke or something like that.
Karaoke
if you're not,
duet. If someone listens want to do a duet, I'm all for it.
Oh, then it could be somebody else doing the duet.
They can do it too.
But I don't know if you're allowed to do a duet. I'm not opposed
to you
doing
a duet. You find a song that has a duet in it.
Yeah, but you just say that. I don't know if those are the rules of karaoke. Every karaoke bar doesn't allow you to do duets.
Do karaoke.
It's COVID. There's a rule.
What? Karaoke is not a competition, once again.
I didn't say it was a competition.
But that's how you look at it.
It's like your goal. It's like bowling. You can't bowl with two people.
You can. You can do whatever you want.
I guess you can do whatever you want. You're right. I don't know why I'm not trying to be a stickler. Yeah, do a duet. That's fine.
Not the rules. Yeah. Who cares, man? Keep bringing the fucking rules.
Okay. If you want to do duets, that'll make you more comfortable. That's fine. Do a duet. My point is, when we get to Austin, I'm going to find a karaoke bar. I would love to have a karaoke night in Austin, Texas with my friend and co-host of the podcast. Anyway, moving on, Fran. There's been a big reveal in the world of cults, which, you know, near and dear to my heart. So there's this cult in Creston, Colorado. I don't know if I'm saying that right. It might be Crestone, Colorado. But a woman named Amy Carlson was found dead on my birthday, April 30th, in the home of her cult. She's the leader of this cult. She was badly decomposed and found wrapped in Christmas lights. Officials estimate that she had been dead for at least a month.
Dang.
Seven members of the cult were arrested and then the whole thing kind of blew up as far as what this cult is. So the cult is called the Love Has Won Cult.
Mm-hmm.
That's the name. It's not a very clever name. So and there's basically been this group of mothers that have banded together to try to
What is it? Love Has Won?
Love Has Won.
Okay.
That we're the cult. We're the spiritual group, cuz they don't call themselves a cult. We're the spiritual group Love Has Won.
Yeah.
And basically this group of mothers has been banding together for years to try to save their children from this cult. Cause it's like a bunch of 23-year-old trust fund kids, mm-hmm. like that have given this lady and her boyfriend or whatever, all their money and property and let them do whatever. Ex-members say that the leader, Amy Carlson, this bitch used to manage a McDonald's, friend.
Mm.
She went from managing a McDonald's to a god.
Wow.
Goals.
Yeah.
Level. It's levels, man. She went from telling some teenager, can you drop another basket of fries to like, I'm a god. Give me all your worldly possessions. So that's quite the level up. But Amy Carlson would have sex with her followers. She would drink heavily, use drugs, and she would only allow them about 3 or 4 hours of sleep per night. And she would verbally abuse them and ration their food. So a lot of them lost a lot of weight. They were delirious. You know, just did not know what was going on.
This is in a house? They all stayed in a house? Or?
Yeah, but like a house with a lot of land. It was out in Colorado. It was like big open plains.
Mm-hmm.
Members believe that the cult leaders, Mother God and Father God, have spent 19 billion years trying to save the planet from final ascension.
Okay.
And, I'm sorry, they've been trying to save the planet and that final ascension is imminent. So at any moment, we'll be the chosen people of Love Has Won, will be lifted up by God or whoever and taken to the better place.
Yeah.
So that's why they're following these people. The leader claimed that Donald Trump is her father, and that deceased actor Robin Williams is also listed as a team member, who Robin Williams has been dead for like 6 years now.
Yeah.
They believe that he is the Archangel Zedekiel, and group members claim to be in regular contact with Williams' ghost and believe he is supporting their mission.
Robin Williams.
Yes, Robin Williams, the genie from Aladdin, Mrs. Doubtfire, Flubber, that guy. Also, love Robin Williams. Robin Williams would probably be the most annoying ghost ever. I wouldn't, if I could think of anybody I would want to be a ghost that like haunts me, it would be Robin Williams would be like on the short list of no's.
Yeah.
He'd just be like, oh, Robin Williams. Oh, it's me. Oh,
voice doing a voice. Oh, whack, whack, whack.
Doing voice. Like, oh, yo, you got to go. You got to relax. Yeah. Like, Robin Williams would be a lot. Mm. So love Robin Williams. But like, also them, he's like their Tom Cruise. Scientology has Tom Cruise. He's like their guy, like the number one guy in Scientology. Their guy is Robin Williams, the ghost of Robin Williams. The cult leaders have conned members out of trust funds, disability and social security checks, and large sums of money. And then there's so much, this story goes so much deeper. I've also found videos and pictures of Amy, and it looks like she suffered from argyria, which is a disease that you get when you digest too much colloidal silver. So if you drink silver, like, you know, the element or whatever, I don't know anything about science, but if you drink colloidal silver, some people get this disease called argyria where your skin turns blue.
Mm.
I call it Violet Beauregard syndrome. So it's like you know, in Willy Wonka, the girl that ate the one piece of gum and then she turned into a blueberry.
Yeah,
like some people that happens to them, like they turn blue.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw some pictures and some videos of her. She looks like she just was suffering from like delusion. Like she was crazy. Like she was just yelling and angry. But they were like, "That's Mother God." That she just.
There's a video.
There's videos of her. Yeah. There's all kind of videos.
What is a picture of her being wrapped up in Christmas lights?
That I did not see.
Is that how she died? That's how she died, though.
I don't know how she died, but maybe she might have died from starvation. Or that's her right there. There's other pictures.
What the?
Yeah, she has like kind of this blue hue to her. But there's videos of her wilding out, abusing cats, and you know her people are still standing by her. Also, Father God still is alive. So there's another. Now the cult is being led by the guy, and the Mother God, Amy, was abusing these people, having sex with them or whatever. So now there's a man in charge. So I'm sure those practices will still persist and, you know, will persist, I mean, and these people are in danger.
So nobody died except her.
She died, but she also exiled this guy named Alex Whitman or named Alex Whitten. She exiled him last year, and this is something that they do a lot. Alex Whitten was found in the deserts of Colorado, dehydrated and dying. He had a bunch of cactus needles in his feet, and they just basically just send you out. They drive you out into the middle of nowhere, mm-hmm. and they're like, "You did something bad, so you're out."
Yeah,
and they literally just drop you out miles and no water, nothing, and just like figure it out. He escaped because he almost died, and somebody found him, and yeah. then you know I guess when they put some burgers in him and gave him some string beans, he was like snapped out of it. But it goes so much deeper, yeah. man. The Love Has Won cult is up on my list. They were the subject of a couple Dr. Phil episodes, I believe, last year. So I'm going to definitely have to check those out. Love Has Won is a very interesting story. And I only scratched the
surface.
Love has won. Love has taken Amy away from us. Rest in peace. I don't know. She seems like a pretty shitty person, honestly.
You know what's crazy? Those people that do that have a talent, but are using it for the wrong purpose.
In Amy Carlson's case, I don't know if she has the talent, yeah. but I agree with you that there are a lot of cult. Nobody calls themselves a cult, just mm-hmm. to say that as well. You know, like none of these people think they're a cult. It's yeah. something else. We're a spiritual retreat. Mm-hmm. We're a sex, freedom, liberation, whatever. We're a yoga practicing, whatever. But, you know, and then they turn into cults when they start doing certain things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she has the talents of a quote unquote cult leader.
Mm-hmm.
But in the world of January 6th happening and QAnon and all that, she's talking their language. Like, yeah, it's loud and aggressive and anti-government and whatever, and people glommed onto it. It worked for some. Hers is a very specific talent.
That like, QAnon shit is something else.
Oh, don't even get me. I've been in so many rabbit holes for the last couple of days between this cult and... you know, I was watching the HBO Max has a show, like a mini series, like it's like six parts called Q Into the Storm, where they break down, they tell you who Q is, you find out who Q is and everything.
No,
it's amazing, bro. No, you do need to because it's just trolls.
Yeah,
it's just video game nerd trolls. That's what it is. It's just, they broke the country.
That's crazy.
A bunch of people who just... are on message boards on the internet. There's no government secret agent. It's just internet trolls. It's fascinating. Oh my God, it's amazing. I've been so captivated by the whole fucking thing. It's been so great. I'll talk about it with anybody who will listen. But anyway, Love Has Won Cult. Please, if anybody has any, send me some links to maybe a podcast that's done a deep dive on this. I'm fully enthralled. Let me know. I want to know all the. I want to know everything. Goodness gracious. Anyway, friend, moving on to something a little more somber, something a little more confusing. I wanted to talk briefly about this story about this young lady named Michaela Miller. There's a story out of Hopkinton, Massachusetts, I believe. It's like a college town. This young lady about a few weeks ago was found hanging from a tree by a belt. They don't know the cause of death, but I'm just going to go over the timeline with you in case you, I don't know if you've heard of it, so I'm just going to go over the whole story with you. So the timeline is, so on Saturday, April 17th, Michaela was with two friends in the common area or the clubhouse. You know how like apartment complexes have that place where you can go that has like a gym, a pool?
Yeah.
That they were at one of those kind of things at the Revolutionary Way apartment complex where she lived. The two friends that she was with were then joined by four other teenagers, two males and two females. While another female teenager remained in a car outside of the complex or outside of the clubhouse. One of the female teenagers inside the common area was in a relationship with Michaela. Sometime between 5:17 p.m. and 6:41 p.m., a physical altercation occurred between Michaela and two of the teenagers, a male and a female, in the common area. I'm starting to piece it together. Like I said, I skipped a lot of it to kind of get to the timeline. But I'm guessing Ryan is the person in charge of the investigation, and somebody asked when she disclosed this information if the kids were white, and then Ryan said to the press that they were of various races. Miss Struthers, Michaela's mother, who, you know, gave a press conference, very powerful press conference that I learned a lot from in that, told the Globe that the five teenagers involved are white, and that the altercation happened because her daughter got into a fight with her girlfriend. So I don't know if maybe her girlfriend is white and these are her family members. I don't really know, you know, why one source is saying that they were various races and then her mother saying like they were all white. So I don't know if maybe Michaela was dating a girl who was white and then these people came and they were like all her friends or what. I don't really know. After the altercation, the teens spent another 20 minutes together in the same area, according to Ryan. At 7:20 p.m., Hopkinton police responded to Michaela's home after Struthers reported that her daughter had been jumped. So Michaela was interviewed by police and told officers that she was pushed and punched in the face during the altercation. Officers noted that she had blood on her lip. The investigation into the assault remains open and there are no charges pending at this point, according to Ryan. At 7:43 p.m., officers left Michaela's home and went to the residence of one of the females who had been involved in the altercation. They took a statement and returned to the apartment complex, observing some damage both inside and outside of the common area, so the clubhouse or whatever. Mm. So they were going at it everywhere. Michaela was still at home with her mother in their apartment. Between 9:30 and 9:45 p.m., Struthers went to bed. Struthers is her mother. So Struthers went to bed, believing that Michaela was still inside the apartment. Between 9 p.m. and 10 p.m., a health app on Michaela's cell phone recorded that the phone had traveled 1,316 steps, which is the approximate distance from the apartment complex to the woods where Michaela's body was found the next morning, according to Ryan. Michaela's last known communication was around 9 p.m. to a teenager who was not involved in the earlier altercation. So on Sunday, the 18th, so the next day, at 7:45 a.m., a jogger located Michaela's body near 34 West Main Street in Hopkinton in the woods off of a walking path and called the police. Michaela had her phone on her, according to them. But I will say that the mom did a press conference, and she said that the phone was off.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I mean. Like, I don't think the mom is telling lies, but there's just all this cloudy confusion about the timeline and some of the facts and some of the evidence and some of the things. And the mom is basically asking for full transparency so she can figure out what the fuck happened to her child.
Yeah.
But at this press conference, Ryan wouldn't go into more details about the scene as far as like what was found at the scene. She said using cell phone data and other digital evidence, authorities confirmed the four teenagers present in the common area during the altercation had not gone to the area of 34 West Main Street. Basically saying,
we can trace phones, mm. and their phones weren't at that point where Michaela's body was found at any point in the night. Mm. That's what they were saying. So basically, that is saying that either these kids are all really smart and went out and committed a crime and were like, leave your phone at home,
yeah.
so they can't track it, or they weren't there. Those are the kind of, that's what the police department is saying. I'm not saying that these kids aren't involved, but if that's what happened, that's why the mom's asking for transparency. If she's asking Lee basically for that information to be made public. And if that's the case, that their cell phones didn't ping at the location where Michaela's body was found, it's kind of hard for me to believe that those kids were involved.
Why can't they tell her that?
I don't know. And she doesn't know either. She's like, I don't know why they're lying to me. They told her not to go to the media. They told Michaela's mother, Miss Fuller, not to go to the media because Michaela was gay. And they're like, you know, the media might try to spin that and make her look bad. And she's like, who the fuck? I don't give a shit. I don't care if she was gay. That also doesn't matter when we're trying to figure out what happened to her. I don't care. I don't care if the world knows that, is what she said. So, and also, it's just weird that they even, why would a police department detective say that?
Yeah.
They also, according to Michaela's mom, because two sides to every story. According to Michaela's mom, her neighbor was going to the local, because it's a college town. Mm-hmm. The neighbor was putting signs on the campus like, we want answers, do your job, whatever, talking to the police department. And in turn, when they found out who it was, the police department, they went and like questioned that neighbor at like 6 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And they felt like it was a threat. They felt like they were harassing the neighbor to get him back for putting these signs out. It didn't feel like they were trying to get answers. Mm-hmm. It felt like they were like, oh, you want to do this? Well, we're going to come wake you up, bang on your door 6 o'clock in the morning and like ask you questions to implicate that maybe you did it. Maybe that's just them doing their investigation. I don't know, but this is what her mother said. So I'm going off of what her mother said. Because like, what dog does she have in the fight other than trying to figure out what the fuck happened to her daughter?
Yeah.
You know? Now, what I wanted to say also is that this is shady, right? And you did a story a few months back about a guy who was found. I think they said it was a suicide. He was hanging from a playground thing across from a trailer park where he had knew the people and they had done drugs together or something to that effect. I don't know if it was drugs, but they had known each other and got into some kind of altercation. And then he quote unquote committed suicide. And his brother said he had on different shoes than the ones. They weren't his shoe size. Yeah. And I think that what I want to say is like, I want to say a PSA, but also like, if you know, I don't know what happened to Michaela Miller, right? Like, this sounds very shady and this could have been something gruesome. But if you read this and or any other story and you don't do the full research and you just go, oh, there's no way a black person committed suicide because black people don't commit suicide, right? That is some people say like, you know, that's not, black people don't do that, right? That is a thought that some people might have, especially in this way, right? Hanging yourself, which is absolutely shady and is a red flag for sure, because it is, but that's a red flag to somebody who didn't do it, because it's like, why would a black person, knowing the history of black people in this country, hang themselves if they wanted to commit suicide and do it publicly? These are all things that go against what some people would deem as like things that people that commit suicide do. Mm-hmm. But my point is, I think that it overshadows the need for mental health awareness and allowing people to talk about things when you just say like, oh, that's not something black people do. Black people don't commit suicide. Black people don't go to therapy. Black people don't do this, that, and the third. So it must be murder. Mm-hmm. And in Michaela Miller's case, it very may well be murder. But sometimes it is like a black person may have committed suicide. That is something that we need to recognize and speak about and deal with, because it is a stigma in our community. Black people don't talk to people. They don't go to therapy. My barber is my therapist. You know, I don't do, you know, working out is my therapy. These things that are just like, no, you need, sometimes traumatic shit happens to people. You need to go sit down and talk to somebody. And the idea that it's like, it's impossible that somebody committed suicide because they're black or that's not something we do or whatever is dangerous. It's a dangerous school of thought. So I don't know what happened to Michaela Miller. I want that this mother to get full transparency. And if these kids are involved, or maybe something outside of these kids is involved, I hope that that's brought to justice and brought to the light. What's really interesting is there's this show on HBO Max called Mayor of Easton. It's starring Kate Winslet. Mm.
And when I heard the story, it reminded me of it because the story is about this killer in town, and a girl gets found dead on a night of a party, like in the woods. And she got beat up that night. Like a group of girls, she had a baby with a guy, and the guy had a new girlfriend, and the new girlfriend catfished the mother of the guy. They were all teenagers. She catfished her and was like, come to the party tonight. I can't wait to see you. But she thinks it's this new guy she likes. And when she shows up to the party, the new girlfriend's like, bitch, that was me. And she beats her up. And all these kids witness it, and there's video footage and everything. And then the girl walks off into the woods, and she gets killed.
Damn.
So I don't know. And again, this is a show, and this is reality. Yeah. But my point is, Michaela Miller could have gotten into that fight and then got killed by some random person.
Yeah,
it could have nothing to do with those kids.
True.
It could be just those two incidences don't coincide with each other. So that was it. Reminded me of that show, which obviously is a TV show, has nothing to do with what happened to this girl. This is absolutely tragic. But I'm just saying the parallels I saw within that show, Mayor of Easton, of how that girl tragically died. She like got in a fight. So there's people who are, you know, implicated immediately, like the girl that beat her up. You're the first suspect. But I don't know if that's the girl that killed her as far as the show, because she just wandered off and then died.
Mm-hmm.
But you're the first suspect. So these kids are all the first suspects. And if there was, then there's a witness saying possibly racial stuff came up, and then this girl's found hanging from a tree.
Yeah.
All of that stuff seems a little red flaggy, not a little, a lot. And
so there's no evidence or nothing like that? No fingerprints, who belt was at? And
not released as of yet. I think that's what the mom's saying. She wants full transparency, and she doesn't feel like they are doing that. She feels like there's a rush to kind of close this and label it as suicide or what. I don't know if it's being labeled as suicide. My point is, you know, I hope that lady gets full transparency, and devoid of Michaela Miller specifically, all of the stuff I was saying about mental health in the Black community and stigmatizing suicide and all of those things, again, separate from Michaela Miller, because this is absolutely a ton of red flags and a suspicious death. But the idea of suicide being like, no, that's impossible because Black people don't do that.
Yeah.
Is something that we need to break away from, because that mentality and saying that kind of stuff publicly, also somebody who's going through having suicidal thoughts might go, oh, well, I'll just keep this to myself because I'm Black and I'm not supposed to feel this way. Mm-hmm. So I'll just sit on it and not let anybody know how I'm feeling, because it doesn't feel like a safe space for me to say those things. So again, rest in peace to Michaela Miller. I don't know what happened, but I hope that we eventually do know what happened.
Yeah. When I hear stories like that, and it's like, as a parent, I go, how do you deal with going or being like, hey, you know, I just want transparency and I just want to know what happened, and then just grieving, you know, just leaving it at that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
It shouldn't be her job, and her kid just died.
Yeah.
And she has to do a press conference being like, hey, where's the evidence? Yeah. That's not her.
But I mean, I'm talking about, like, for me personally, I don't think me just saying, hey, I want to know what happened, and that's it. I don't think that's how I can operate.
Like, you're saying you would want to get out there and find
something,
some answers.
Gotta happen.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because her mother was actively like, I don't want to be a vigilante in this situation. I want the criminal justice system to do their job.
I don't know.
I don't want to be banging on doors and going to these kids' houses and interrogating them.
I don't know.
I don't want to do that. Man. That's what she was saying.
I don't know. Man.
I don't want to do that. I want y'all to do your job. What's her message?
I mean, and I'm being serious. Like, I'm not saying this as a joke. Like, yeah. Not trying to be funny or anything. I don't know. I gotta do what I gotta do. I'm sorry.
But you shouldn't have to do what you have to do. The criminal justice system should be doing that. That's what I mean.
Either way.
You're saying, like, if they're not, you would feel like they weren't doing it fast enough for you.
Either way.
No matter what.
No matter.
You didn't have answers, like, the same day.
Yeah, either way.
Which I understand. I don't have kids, but I can imagine it's like, yeah. It's been 2 weeks and you're like, we still don't know what happened.
People's not responding. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
it's been good days going by and I don't hear nothing. Like,
yeah.
My child just died. It's been days and hours where I don't know what the fuck is going on. I don't know anything. No way. I couldn't even function every day to have that on my mind and just be like, I gotta go to work or something. Like,
yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah, it's
way.
It's crippling for sure.
No
that
way.
To just have that
up in the already your kid is gone.
Yeah.
And you don't know
every
what
day you're just thinking like what, and looking you at your like, phone. That's oh you, that's tra-
and you,
oh my
and
goodness.
You feel like the people whose job it is are like avoiding you.
Yeah.
No. That's you know that's a very yeah that's mm-hmm. tragic, man. I think you wanted to play some games, which is convenient oh, because yeah. we've been talking for a long time and we only had one patron this week. So shout out okay. to Brandy H. Shout out to you. I'm sorry you don't get music, but Brandy H, shout out to you. Thank you very much.
Oh, man, give us some music.
I'm sorry, man. It's 2 seconds, man.
I mean, it's not fair.
Shout out to Brandy H, man. Hey, Brandy, shout out to you. That's the button
I got
that we
you
have.
Back.
You know, shout out to you. We appreciate you. This is not, you know, strictly a platonic shout out. This is just the music that we had on hand.
Yeah.
More applause for Brandy H. Shout out to you. Thank you so much for the support.
How you know that wasn't her favorite song?
Careless Whisper?
No, the
oh, Celebrate?
Yeah.
I mean, it could be. I'm jam, sorry. Man. But what am I going to play for a half a second?
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Could it do a little rhyme or something? For at least?
You know what? If we get more patrons next week, I'll do it again.
Again, okay.
I'm sorry.
That's
sorry.
Only right.
Brandy, I'm sorry,
that's
Brandy.
Only right, man.
Brandy, rain check.
You did her dirty. I'm disappointed.
I feel bad about it. Now that you keep it going. Yeah, that's my bad. Brandy, rain check. Rain
Anywho, check. I do have some random questions for you.
Okay.
This is, again, some comedy movie trivia questions.
Comedy movie trivia questions.
This is not like the ones I did. We did a couple weeks ago. It was just like I gave you a brief description.
Yeah. I like that. I like that game, too, though.
Yeah. So this one is just testing your knowledge a little bit.
Okay.
So National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Oh, not one. I've really. Okay. Okay.
Was released when?
84. 89. Yeah. That's probably family vacation was probably like 84, 85.
So these are just, now these questions are just.
That's just not a movie. Black people don't watch. Yeah. National
okay. But
Christmas
I'm saying
vacation.
These questions are just like random. Just.
Yeah, sure.
There's no, you don't have, I'm sure you don't have to.
You
think
either know it or you
things.
Don't know it. Yeah. Exactly. You either know it or you don't know it. Yeah. Sure. I don't
this
know one, that one.
This one is easy.
Okay.
So, okay. So Reno 911.
Yes.
Miami is based on a show from what TV network?
Reno. Oh, Cops. Wait, what? What is the Reno 911 Miami
mm-hmm.
is based on, what did you say?
Reno 911.
Yes.
Miami is based on a TV show from what TV network?
Oh, Comedy Central.
Yep.
Okay, that was you phrased that weird and then you did that weird pause.
I'm reading it straight from this.
Okay, cool. The way that you broke it up was okay.
I'm
cool.
sorry.
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you seen Legally Blonde?
Yeah, a couple of times.
Okay.
But like years ago. Elwood.
I mean, so you're pretty familiar with the movie?
Yeah,
with the movie.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So how many different hairstyles did Reese Witherspoon sport in Legally Blonde?
Eight.
Did he have a lot of hairstyles?
I mean, she did all kind of hairstyles, fashion choices. I mean, yeah, it was a lot. Eight?
No.
More?
Yeah.
Man, come on.
She had 40 different hairstyles.
I'm not surprised. It's a very hair movie. The movie's very hairy. A lot of it takes place in a hair salon, I think.
You're not doing so well.
Yeah, this is random as fuck, man. I don't know how to. This is what?
Okay.
This well, isn't a good quiz, but okay, go ahead.
It is a good quiz.
No, it's not. Because it's like not.
What name appears on Fogel's fake ID in a 2007 movie Superbad?
Oh, Muhammad.
Sure.
No, I'm sorry.
Sure.
Arish initially, right? Sure. That's what he got. Oh, no, McLovin. No, he said, why didn't you pick a more common name?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the joke right now, but he was like, Muhammad's like the most common name on earth or whatever. McLovin. McLovin's on the ID.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
That's being funny.
No, Muhammad is part of the joke. It doesn't okay. matter. Whatever.
Yep. You got it wrong.
But, no, but McLovin.
What was the film Bruce Almighty rated?
No, but McLovin.
Okay.
What was it rated?
Yeah. Oh.
What do you think that this is? What about this was interesting that you were like, let me test him on this.
I just want to see.
This
you
doesn't
know.
Have anything to do with like the movies themselves. PG-13.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Why are you stressing yourself out?
Because this is like this is dumb. This is
this
making
is,
me mad. These
but
are
this
not
is
things
funny.
That this doesn't
this
test
funny.
Your knowledge of the movie. It's like just random. Things that no, this doesn't, it has anything to do with them. Like, who knows how many hairstyles?
That's why it's funny.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. What was the name of Jack Black's character in the movie School of Rock?
I fucking love that movie, too. That's fucking it. Mr. Oh, he stole his friends. Oh, Ned Schneebly.
Nope.
I don't know his fucking real name. That's his roommate's name, is Ned Schneebly. Fucking, that's like one of my favorite movies, too. Fucking wow. I don't know.
You don't know?
No.
Dewey Finn.
Dewey fucking Finn. Well, he's Ned Schneebly for like 80% of the movie, but whatever. Go ahead.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead.
You all right?
I'm fine, man.
Sweating over there,
no,
man.
No, because I don't. That
you
was
known
not,
that one.
No, I shouldn't have known that because
you should have known that.
He's Ned Schneebly to okay. the kids.
All right.
Dewey Finn. Ah, oh, whatever, man. That one pissed me off.
I'm gonna throw you easy. I actually love another easy one.
Oh, it's easy. Oh, Mr. Knowledge of Movies, friend. You have only seen like 4 movies in your life, so I don't like that you think you can come in here and play these games with me with these fucking. These random parts of movies that nobody should know.
Why are you getting a hostile, man?
No, because I don't like that you think you can come in here and ask me about movies when funny. You don't know diddly squat about
can't
movies.
You can't get everything right.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry, continue.
And what film did Spike Lee play Mookie?
Mookie, the Snooki Brothers. That's White Man Can't Jump.
Nope.
Oh, no, it's not. It's Do the Right Thing. I'm sorry.
Yep.
I'm sorry. It's Rosie Perez, the Rosie Perez thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Spike Lee's not even in White Man Can't Jump. He directed
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
He directed it.
How do you not know that?
Rosie Perez is the link.
Sure. All right, let's do one more. Who plays Jessica in American Pie?
Allison Hannigan?
Nope.
Jessica. The fuck is Jessica? Elizabeth, what's her fucking name? No, her name, that's Nadia. Jessica. Oh, Amy Smart.
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
I don't fucking know.
Natasha Leon? Leon? You know what it is?
No,
all right, what boy is? And what state does Napoleon Dynamite take place? You don't know?
What? You have the thing in front of you, so whatever. I can't even ask you. They don't fucking even. I don't even think they say that at any point in the fucking movie. Somewhere in the Midwest, fucking Flatland, Wyoming. Where?
Idaho.
They don't fuck. There's no way they say that at any point in that movie. There's not a chance they say that at any point in that whole fucking movie. This is stupid and I hate this.
Oh,
I hated all of that. That pissed me off so much.
This is Patreon exclusive right here.
That pissed me off so much. I don't even. There's no way that at any point in that movie,
mm-hmm.
anybody says, like, oh, I got to get out of Idaho or I love it in Idaho. And Pedro never, nobody ever, Uncle Rico, nobody says, Idaho at any point in that fucking movie.
I'm sure it does.
There's no fucking chance.
I'm sure it does.
I'm willing to bet money.
I'm willing to bet money.
Okay, I bet you $20.
I bet you $100 it says it in the movie.
Oh, okay. Well, you're going big money, huh? Okay. All right, okay, cool.
You know what? Nope. I got a bet for you. If it does,
mm-hmm.
says it in the movie.
You don't get to take karaoke off the movie. So we can just move on. No, we can just move on. That's fine. So we just won't bet. That's fine.
What?
All right, Kyle.
I wasn't going to say that.
Yeah, okay, then what were you going to say?
I was going to say.
What were you going
to say? I was going to say, if it does say in the movie,
uh-huh.
we got to do a duet. Karaoke duet.
I'm not opposed to a duet, man. That's fine. I'd rather bet you $20.
Or I don't have to do it at all.
No,
if it says it in
that's
the movie.
Not on the table. I'll do a duet with you regardless, so that's fine. All right, whatever. I'll bet you
$20.
If somebody can pull up Napoleon Dynamite,
mm-hmm.
watch the movie and clip at any point if they say, like, man, we're in Idaho. And I don't listen. If it's on a magazine or like a newspaper or
that's
something like that
movie.
For 2 seconds, no,
that's
no, no,
in
no,
the
no,
movie.
No. Because this whole thing of like,
how many
hairstyles did she have in Legally Blonde? Who? Why did you say I have a fucking clicker while I'm watching the movie, being like, that's an updo, a bob. Oh, she did a ponytail.
But if somebody was paying attention, they would go, she has a lot of hairstyles. In
but
the
a
movie.
Specific number. That's
maybe,
crazy.
Maybe like, if you would have said like 25, I'd be like, okay, well, I could tell he pays attention. She has a lot of hairdos. But you were wrong. You were way off. And you're supposed to pay attention to these movies. You're a movie guy. This is your lane. I figure you would pay attention.
Yeah, my bad. Sorry, I don't know how many hairdos.
If it pops up in a movie that Napoleon Dynamite takes place in Idaho, you would know.
But I feel like it's going to be like when the bus rides by, it's going to be like Idaho public school system or something like that. Something that is just
welcome
not,
to Idaho or something like that?
Yeah, or a sign or something like that. That's not fair. But
it
I'll still
fair.
Keep the bet on the table. Yeah. And if I lose, I owe you $20. Okay. I feel like that's what somebody's going to like tweet, though. Like, hey,
yeah.
this sign says the best eggs in Iowa
but
when they do
the
farm
movie.
Scene.
It's in the movie.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens. I don't think Iowa's mentioned at all in that movie. But clearly it must be if this... Whoever this fucking BuzzFeed
hey,
quiz
man,
or
look,
whatever
hey.
Fucking stupid thing you got this
hey.
From, put it in there. It must be some evidence of that it takes place in
you
Iowa.
You failed this quiz, man. That's we gonna move on.
That's fine. Anyway, folks, what we're gonna do is we're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back after me and Fran do a kumite fight, you know the winner of that will go first, and you know so we'll be right back.
Affirmative Murder is brought to you by My Life in a Book. With Mother's Day right around the corner, I just know you guys are thinking about a truly special gift for your mom.
Well, let me tell you about a pretty priceless gift. MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book that you could pass down from generation to generation, which I think is a pretty awesome memento to leave behind. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you want to ask. Your mother or the mother can either type her response or record her voice. MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It would be like preserving her voice and her stories for all of eternity. Your mom's giving you a lifetime of stories, and this is your chance to give her a way to share them. I'm in the middle of my MyLifeInABook.com journey, and I'm really excited to see how it turns out. I've been asking some pretty thought-provoking and funny questions, and you know, I'm excited to see the response, but I'm also just excited to have the physical book in my hands and know that I can look back on it in 20, 30 years. The interface is super user-friendly. The questions are super easy to set up. It's a breeze of a process. So what I need you to do is check out MyLifeInABook.com. That's MyLifeInABook.com. And use code AMP, that's A, M as in Mother's Day, P, at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for the mom in your life this Mother's Day. One more time, that's MyLifeInABook.com. Use code AMP for 10% off today.
Welcome back. It's my turn to go first this week. So my affirmative murder this week is about the case of the death, and I guess you could say death and disappearance of Jonathan Luna.
So we have come to the conclusion that Fran's story, he actually did. I mean, albeit this was over a year ago, I believe. I mean, this was definitely some time ago when you did it. But this, what's his name again?
Jonathan Luna.
Jonathan Luna is the story. I don't know. I can't say what episode off the top of my head, but you've done this story before. So what we're going to do is, we're not going to take a quick break. What we'll do is, this will just be a one episode episode. Or, I mean, this will just be a one story episode. And we'll come back next week with two once again. But we'll just, you know, we talked a lot in the beginning. So we'll just make this a one episode. My story is a little long. And then we'll just do one story, wrap it up, and we'll get out of here. My affirmative murder is actually a story that has been brought back into public conversation. It was a story about a guy who was executed 4 years ago. He was on death row, and he was put to death about 4 years ago. And DNA evidence has potentially exonerated him and proven that he is innocent. So I wanted to just do the, instead of just talking about it in the beginning of the podcast, like a current events kind of thing, I just wanted to tell the full story of Liddell Lee and, you know, kind of go and give the current status of the case with the new revelation from the Innocence Project and the ACLU and kind of where it stands as of today. So, like I said, my affirmative murder this week is the story of Liddell Lee. So Liddell Lee was born on July 31st, 1965. Liddell was born with fetal alcohol syndrome disorder, a medical condition that left him with brain dysfunction and intellectual disability. He was raised mostly fatherless and impoverished in Blytheville, Arkansas, according to his brother, Howard Young. Lee and his brother shared one of their home's three bedrooms and their clothes, even frequently exchanging the same pair of pants on the same day, which is something that I kind of envy because...
I was about to say underwear.
I mean, it might be that too. I mean, I'm not on the same day. That's crazy. But I'm like, my point is, I'm mad thick, so like, I could never share a pair of pants.
Like, I had to rubber band them.
Yeah, it would be. They would just be like knee. They would just be like go up. They would just be knee pants. Like you pull them up to your knees and then button them and belt them at the knees.
Yeah.
You know, and then everything else is out. I have to wear like a. I'd be like them franchise boys. I have to wear like a big white tee, and then it'd go down to where the jeans start, which is my knees. So I'm always like this, that movie, The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. It's like four friends all had this one pair of pants that they like had special moments in. Mm. And I'm like, I could never do that with them. Yeah. None of the brotherhood of the homies with the traveling 501 jeans. Like it just could, that movie could never happen and I'd be involved because I'm like a 38 waist and you're like a 26 waist. Yeah. Like it'd be crazy. Your jeans, I have to roll them up and then I'd put them as the belt loop. I'd put them through the belt loops of another pair of jeans and they'd be my belt for my jeans. But anyway, on February 9th, 1993, just minutes after getting off the phone with her mother, Newlywed and mother Deborah Reese was the victim of a brutal homicide when she was strangled and beaten upwards of 36 times with a tire iron given to her by her husband for protection. She was found in her home in Jacksonville, Arkansas. And less than an hour later, Liddell Lee was arrested after allegedly spending $300 stolen from Reese. Lee was charged with first-degree murder. He was found less than an hour late, less than an hour after the murder. He was rounded up, arrested, and he was charged with first-degree murder, which is a capital offense. After being charged in the murder of Deborah Reese, Lee became a suspect in other crimes. He was accused of 3 sexual assaults and convicted of 2. The 1991 rape of a Jacksonville, Arkansas woman and the 1990 rape of a Jacksonville teenager. His semen was found on the woman's jeans and on the teenager's body. He was convicted on 1 rape charge before the murder trial, but all 3 rape cases were disclosed during the sentencing part of the Reese case trial. So basically, they painted this picture that he's this brutal animal who rapes women. I mean, listen, the guy was found guilty of 2 rapes. Mm-hmm. But to bring that up during a separate trial, and basically what I'm saying is the district attorney used it as a weapon. They were like, this guy's guilty of these 2 rapes, or he's being, at least they didn't know yet, he's being charged with these 2 rapes. So I'm going to use that to be like, this guy's a, they called him a hunter. And this is also when like super predator became a thing. Like, I don't know, Bill Clinton, who knows? I don't think Bill Clinton might've said it, or maybe Joe Biden, I don't know. Somebody said during the 1990s when, you know, high crime rates in New York, this super predator thing describing black teenagers became like a term used to describe black teenagers. Mm. And they described him as that and as a hunter, and he hunts these women and he's dangerous. So they used the 2 rape charges to like sway the people in the court during the trial for the murder, but they're separate. They didn't have, one didn't have anything to do with the others, but he was eventually found guilty of those rapes. So he did them,
yeah.
You know, as far as the court's concerned. So I'm not saying like those didn't happen and he didn't kill anybody. And this is just some guy who didn't do anything wrong. That's not what I'm saying. It's not so black and white. Everything has an area of the shade of gray, mm-hmm. You know, shout out to T.I. Oh, no, never mind. What? Not shout out to T.I. at all. T.I. is going through some super crazy shit right now, so never mind. Never mind. No shout outs out to T.I.
I don't know what's going on with T.I.
It's like a sex trafficking kind of thing.
T.I.?
Him and his wife, they were like fucking shit. Getting girls and making them do shit. I don't know. It's crazy. Anyway, don't know all the details, and you know, don't not allegedly.
Shout out
allegedly. I don't, that's his lyric. I don't know. It has an area the shade of gray, even if I left the day and stayed away. What's the one? That's the Rihanna song, Live Your Life. Mm. Anyway, shout out to Rihanna, though. Rihanna's doing fine. She's doing great. Rihanna's great. Holly Lodge Meyer, the lead prosecutor on all 5 of Lee's cases, profiled him as, like I said, she profiled him as a hunter and everything that I said. According to Deborah Reese's father, Stephen Williams, Deborah got off the phone with her mother after she was spooked when a man she didn't know knocked on her door asking if he could borrow tools to fix his car. So like I said earlier, when I first started, she got off the phone with her mom. Her mom was the last person she spoke to, and that's why she got off the phone, because somebody knocked on her door somebody that she didn't know was asking for help. Later, a shoe print matching a pair of 10.5 Converse sneakers that Lee owned was found in the bedroom where she was killed. So was a hair strand, but it was not forensically linked to Lee. The state crime laboratory confirmed that Lee's sneakers contained drops of human blood, but the sample was not large enough to test for a match with Reese's DNA at the time, according to the prosecutor. Now, up until his death, Liddell was asking for DNA to be, you know, examined, like take it to a lab and run it. And he was saying, like, this will prove that it wasn't me. If you're saying there's blood on my shoes, there's blood on the at the crime scene, there's hair, run these things. Mm-hmm. And everything that they did run wasn't a match for him. They had fingerprints on the scene. They had this hair on the scene. They didn't match. And then she's saying the blood on the shoe was not enough to take to the lab. But I don't know if that part's true. But they're saying, but the shoe is the same size, so it's his shoe. That's, you know, so that's basically their logic is like, yeah, there's DNA evidence on the shoe, but we don't have enough for that. But the shoe itself is the same size, so we'll go with that part, but not the other part. So they were really picking and choosing what evidence they wanted to present to the jury.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's what the DA does. I'm gonna show the stuff that works for me, And any of the stuff that doesn't work for me, I'm going to bury it and get it out of here and not have it show up in during the trial. A second neighbor of Reese's testified that Lee knocked on his door as well, asking for tools. The neighbor loaned Lee the tools, which he never recovered, according to Meyer. Meyer went on to posit that Lee knocked on doors to scout whether women were alone. From the beginning, Liddell proclaimed his innocence and wrote to everyone who he could think of, beseeching lawyers to come and fight for him. His journey through the legal system consisted of an unbroken chain of drunk, conflicted, and grossly incompetent attorneys. So this guy just, everybody, he was all public defenders and people who weren't good at their jobs. Somebody who was part of his defense got reprimanded for how bad he did on this trial. Like, he got in trouble. He was so bad. Yeah. He was so bad at his job that, like, he got in trouble.
Coming fumbling and shit all
over. Yeah, pretty much.
So when they do that, if they try to reach out for lawyers, I'm talking about for him. If he tries to reach out for these lawyers to come and fight for him, what is the incentive for them to go, okay, is it just it being
the lawyer?
Possibly a high profile case? Okay.
Or they'll say it out of the good of my heart or whatever, but they'll be saying that to like 30 cameras and 40 microphones and flashing cameras. So typically it's a high profile case.
Yeah, okay.
Well, no, but really it's like
get paid?
I think that a public defender gets paid. But a lot of times they come and they say, I'm doing it pro bono. Like if you were assigned to the case, you get paid. I'm assuming public defenders get paid shit though.
Right.
They get paid nothing. They get paid not shit. I mean, they get paid more than the person that works at Burger King gets paid, but like they don't get paid what Johnny Cochran was getting paid So,
but he got the leeway to do so. He got the room to go, I'll do this pro bono.
That's what I mean, because what my point is that it's almost like a commercial for yourself.
Yeah.
Like when you do something pro bono, you might not get paid in that moment, but you being able to go on speaking tours, write books about the case.
More clients.
More clients. If you beat an unbeatable case.
Yeah.
Johnny Cochran beat an unbeatable case. And I'm sure he was doing well before then, but then after that, the moon. You know,
the whole law firm,
but they were getting paid to do that as well. Sure. They weren't doing it pro bono, but if they had done it pro bono and got them off, the money that they make after that is way above what they got to pay to do that one case.
But everybody knew who he was, though. He wasn't doing it on pro bono.
OJ Simpson. No. Pay me. I want all of the money. So yeah, he had this slew of incompetent attorneys. One of them was drunk. And the point is, again, I don't know whether or not Liddell Lee is guilty, but guilty or innocent, everyone should be afforded a fair chance of defending themselves. Because if you don't provide that, then you end up with the America that we currently have, which is a legal system that a rich person can beat a case that a poor person can't.
Yeah.
It doesn't have anything to do with innocence or guilt.
Right.
Based on the things that I've read in the Liddell Lee case, if he had money and a proper defense mounted, he could have beat this case.
Yeah.
Which is saying, like, if you have money in this country, it is literally the difference between life and death. It's literally the difference between life and death in a bunch of circumstances, including the criminal justice system. Liddell Lee was convicted of first degree murder by the jury and sentenced to death on October 16th, 1995. No one who represented Liddell Lee looked at the chasm between the state's theory of guilt and the proof presented at the trial. For instance, the crime scene was drenched in blood, but the state's witness, who put Liddell at the scene, said he didn't have any blood on him. Also, we know how unreliable witness testimony is in the first place. So even that already, they're like, it was him, but he didn't have blood, but the crime scene had blood. Maybe a black guy just needed help with their car. Like, it's so up in the air that I think that a good defense attorney could pick this whole thing apart, which is not something that he had. Also, none of the limited forensic evidence tested, like the fingerprint analysis that I mentioned or the hair, matched him. No defense lawyer had ever even hired a psychologist to test Liddell's intellectual disability because, like I said, he was born with fetal alcohol syndrome. If there's like a bar for like mental competency a mentally challenged person, you can't execute a mentally challenged person. So if they don't meet the standard of whatever that is, they're not eligible to be put to death. And nobody that was hired to work for him during the years and years that he was fighting and appealing hired a psychologist to go, hey, man, this guy, you can't put him to death. Liddell had also been asking for DNA testing for decades. Like he was like, test the blood on the shoe, test the stuff.
Yeah.
And they just wouldn't. They didn't test the stuff. Liddell's relationship with his lawyers broke down over his insistence on defending his innocence.
They got his lawyers got tired of him saying, like, I'm innocent. I didn't do this. So they basically probably were telling him to take a plea. So, you know, and he's like, I'm not taking a plea. I didn't do this. And they're like, oh my God, this guy's so difficult.
Yeah.
I quit. Like, he had lawyers quit on him. The judge wrote to the Arkansas Supreme Court and opposed new counsel for Liddell. So they were basically, the judge was saying, we should not provide this guy new counsel. He should have to defend himself because, you know, he's being difficult and no lawyers wants to work with him. You're supposed to be impartial. You're the judge. You're not supposed to have thoughts about the person that you're judging. Mm. And this judge went on to be the same judge who presided over Liddell Lee's case. So this guy was already in his mind. He's like, this guy's a piece of shit. He definitely did it. Fuck this guy. We shouldn't even give him a lawyer. And then he went on to be the judge for his trial.
Shit.
Which is crazy. Like, the judge should be impartial and have no horse in the race or thoughts about you. Should just be looking at the facts. But this judge already was like, nah, this guy's definitely guilty. And there are rumors, I don't know if they were confirmed or not, that the judge was having an affair with the prosecutor.
Which is like shit going on.
Which is like, you definitely want the prosecutor to win. You know, if y'all are, or at least let me take that back. Maybe you don't want them to win, but a competent defense lawyer is like, this whole trial, this is a mistrial.
Yeah.
A competent lawyer is like, maybe y'all are just having sex in your own personal time, but this is all mixed up and crazy, and I'm calling for a mistrial. That's just what you would do.
That's crazy. He wasn't having any luck with that shit.
At all.
Well, that's what you just give up. That's what I'm like.
Yeah, it's like, man, this is, look, your defense lawyer is like, Your Honor, I say that, you know, if you think that if he's guilty, then it's just like,
can't be arrested for that?
Huh?
Can't be arrested for that? Should be.
Not if everybody wants the guy to die. If the judge is like, yeah, I want this guy to die, be drunk. I don't give a do bad. I don't care.
Wow.
Go ahead.
So, but the whole thing is, he's saying he's innocent. He didn't do it.
Yes.
But they don't have anybody else in questioning and nothing like that. No. Since they didn't run evidence, all they have is just him.
Yeah.
That's
wild. And they have blood. They have other things that maybe you at least exhaust all the effort. You know what I mean? Because the thing is, what happens, first of all, this took decades. This happened in 1993. He was executed in 2017. Mm-hmm. So her son was 7 years old when she was murdered. So this guy grows up hearing that Liddell Lee killed his mom. They're not looking for any other suspect. So when, by the time it's time to execute him, this man is not trying to hear anything about the Innocence Project or this, maybe this guy didn't do it. Liddell Lee is the boogeyman.
Yeah.
And because you guys never tried to find another suspect, And really just close the book. Maybe Liddell Lee's a big liar, but why not test the blood, see what it comes back as? And if there is another person that comes up, at the very least, there's another person who was there, who was involved, that maybe Liddell Lee is protecting or something, that's still out there and got away with killing this kid's mom.
That could open up a whole another can of worms, though. If it's been that long, how long ago was that?
1993 to 2017.
Okay, so
about like 24 years.
So if they did that, now I'm not saying that, you know, he should have been killed or whatever.
Sure.
So they shouldn't have tested DNA evidence. I'm saying that if they were to do that, so say if the son was like, I want you guys to test the DNA. I want
anybody her to do son?
It. Her son. What if he went on and said that? Okay.
He could.
And they did that, and they go, he's innocent. Then the person they go to, you know, they go, okay, then it's somebody else.
Sure.
They gotta investigate all over again.
Sure.
Then you gotta do it on evidence that's 20 years old.
Yeah.
And then the person might not even be alive anymore. And it's like, and then the son could go, I don't even,
you got nothing.
Where's the closure? I don't have.
But in your scenario, what it sounds like, I know it's not what you're meaning to sound for it to sound like. In your scenario, it's like, if I'm the son, just fucking kill him.
He was eight and he grew up and like you say, he's the boogeyman.
They're like, no, kill him.
I don't want y'all to test that.
Yeah.
No, this is him.
He did it. Yeah. He did it. And that's the guy's mentality.
Right.
Yeah. So, but that's not right.
Yeah.
Because you should want to, that's not justice. If you don't rule out all the possible suspects and all the possible scenarios, then it's possible that the person that killed your mother, not to drag this guy into it and make him out like he's a bad guy or whatever, but in all cases, we've done so many cases,
yeah,
or even just read stories about the Innocence Project overturning convictions, and then the family's like, we know that that was him, so we don't really, that's, you guys freed a guilty man that's a monster. They're not trying to hear that you, the DNA or whatever. They're like, no, I believed this for 20 years that that guy killed my family member.
Yeah.
So you're not going to tell me it wasn't them.
I get that. So, but you have to be in the shoes of this, this guy now, but as a kid, you have to, you go, well, you know, what would you, how would you play this out? How would you take this? You would go, I want him. That's all you know.
Absolutely.
That's all you know. But then at the
same, he got what he wanted. He got what he wanted.
Yeah, true. But I'm saying that if I don't see him or anybody as the family to go exhaust all everything that you have evidence, test everything.
Yeah.
They're not trying to hear that shit, man. No. They like put him away.
They're like, we heard enough evidence. You proved it to us.
Yeah.
You proved it to us that it was him. So we're not trying to hear that, you know, oh, we now it wasn't him and we have no suspects, so that it might be an open case for another 17 years.
Yeah. And now that they have a suspect, who they think did it, you have the judge, you have the prosecutors on the family side.
Yeah. They have to go through this whole thing all over again.
Yeah, but I'm saying that if he's like, no, I want him put away, everybody's on his side.
Yeah.
He's the one that lost a family member, he's grieving or whatever. Everybody, absolutely. They're not trying to, they're against that guy, so they're like, we got to do everything we need to do to put him away.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely. So, this is what this guy experienced. Yeah. Also, I'll get into some more stuff. There was so much happening within the country that also people in the Innocence Project and the ACLU believe played a big role in the results of his trial, which I'll get to. A neuropsychologist finally tested Liddell for the first time the week before his execution.
What?
That's 27 years, bro.
But is that them doing that? Just,
well, they what happened was the ACLU and the Innocence Project took the case up.
So he finally
had a good defense mounted up for him.
Yeah. Well, I thought that it was just like, let's just see what happens. It's already locked in.
Yeah. For shits and gigs. Yeah. Hey, take this test. No, it only happened because he finally had a competent defense in his corner. The results were that Liddell was likely ineligible to be executed because he had significant intellectual deficits and disabilities. So like I said, you can't execute mentally challenged people.
Yeah.
It's like the law. So if this was presented in 1993 or 1995 when he was convicted, they wouldn't have given him the death penalty because they wouldn't have been able to. And then at least, and here's the fucked up part, it was all a matter of, what it all boiled down to once the Innocence Project and the ACLU got involved, they just didn't have enough time. It was a week before his execution when they did this test.
So you can't, it's too late to overturn.
It's too late to, they started sending out like motions and claims were filed requesting more time to fully develop and present evidence that his execution was unconstitutional. They were all dismissed and characterized as run-of-the-mill last-minute stalling tactics. So basically the governor and other people in, you know, the criminal justice system were like, they're a week out from his execution and they're just trying to stall. They're just looking from try to buy more time. They don't have anything. This stuff, this evidence, quote unquote, it's all just flim flam. That's what the prosecutors were saying. Liddell's story was also overshadowed by the fact that Governor Hutchinson, I don't know the person's first name, but the governor of Arkansas, had come up with this grand idea to kill 8 prisoners in 11 days. With 4 sets of double executions set for the 17th of April, the 20th of April, the 24th, and the 27th of April 2017.
What's going on?
Yeah, so he was like, we're going to do all these executions in 11 days, and this is crazy why. Let me tell you why. So check this out. The governor said the highly unusual time frame was necessary in Arkansas because the state's supplies of the sedative midazolam, used as the first of 3 drugs in the cocktail in lethal injections, was expiring on April 30th.
So they had to use it.
And would be hard to replace.
What kind of shit is that?
So it was basically like an accounting issue. Like they were like, well, this shit's going to go bad soon. The expiration date's coming up. So we're going to kill all these people in a row before the 30th, before the expiration date.
So we're losing money.
Basically. You know, in my house, listen, if we forgot it was a jug of milk in the fridge and it expires in 3 days, we're not just going to start making milk food.
Yeah.
Just throw the jug out, man. Yeah. Go get some more milk. It is what it is. You fucked up.
Yeah, take the L.
You took the L, go get, you got to go buy some more milk.
Yeah.
Maybe the milk you like is artisanal. You can't get it everywhere. It might be a little more of a hunt, but you got to go just replace the milk. You can't go like, we got to just make everything out of milk for the next couple of days.
Make the money's worth.
Yeah, so we can get it before it expires. That, I mean, that's the reason that this governor expedited tried to expedite killing 8 people in 11 days. And at least one of the cases, there are people saying, hey, this guy, we think this guy's innocent. And they're like, nah, well, the midazolam expires in 10 days.
So he came out and told that to the public.
Yeah.
That's bold.
He was like, and what do you think? Midazolam grows on trees?
You take that to the grave, man.
Yeah, that's like, that's the part you're not supposed to say. That's the part that you write your memoirs and like apologize for on your deathbed.
Yeah.
I killed all those people because the drugs were going bad. And it's like, beep.
Yeah.
And he just came out at a press conference in a suit.
Like, yeah, this shit is running low, so it's expiring, so we got to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Just line them up.
Yeah, just get them. We're going to do it all. We're going to do a soul train line of executions all in a row.
Yeah.
Because we got to get this shit out of here. And also, I don't go into full detail, but that in and of itself was a whole scandal.
How did that not cause uproar?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know at all. But it's even just, I just explained like a small fraction of that part of the story.
Yeah.
There's all this stuff about, they bought some other drug in the parking lot. Like, there was all this shady stuff, like, because they ran out of a couple of different drugs, and one of the drugs wasn't approved to be used in executions. It was this whole shady thing happening, but they were trying to rush the process for whatever reason, I guess because the midazolam was going bad. So they also replaced some other drugs just to make sure that they got it done when they were trying to get it done. It was a whole fucking mess. Critics and lawyers for the 8 countered that the plan was rushed and could expose the men to the risk of cruel and unusual punishment through botched procedures. So basically what would happen was midazolam, its purpose is to put you to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the prisoners could potentially be paralyzed, because that's the first step, and then not be put to sleep. And then the third drug is injected, which is what kills you. I think sodium pentothal
They
serum.
Get 3 injections?
They get 3 injections. One is to paralyze you, one puts you to sleep,
oh,
and one stops your heart. But if the middle one doesn't work, then you're just paralyzed, awake, and feeling every second of your death when the third injection comes in.
Oh.
So what they were saying was,
if the first one paralyzes you. So if there was no second one, you could still,
if there was no second one, you'd be awake. Basically, that's why they're saying it's cruel and unusual, because basically the idea of the death penalty is, at least now, before it was like firing squad, which is, there's some states trying to re-implement that. I think it might have been approved in Texas, but there, you know, firing squad, electrocution. These are gruesome punishments.
In Texas, they're trying to
bring it back, firing squad. Yeah, yeah.
Where would they do that?
Everything's bigger in Texas, man. But my point is, the lethal injection idea came about because it's like, we're America, we shouldn't be killing people in such terrible ways, but these people still have to die if they do terrible things. So they came up with the idea of lethal injection. We paralyze you, we put you to sleep, and then you just, you know, your heart slowly fades away and you die and it's not painful or whatever. At least that's what they say. I'm not getting the needle in me. I don't know what it feels like to die that way, but the idea is that it's this humane way of just killing a bad person. But if you are paralyzed, not put the sleep part, and then lethally injected with the poison or toxin or whatever that part is, then you just can't move or say anything. And then you're awake going through this terrible pain and slowly dying.
I thought it just paralyzes your whole body.
That's so what the first one does.
Yeah, so you wouldn't be able to feel anything, right? That's what happened.
No, not numb. Just paralyzed.
That's what I'm getting mixed up.
Yeah,
okay,
just paralyzed. Right. So you can't move, but you still feel everything. I think maybe the second one is that it puts you in such a deep sleep that you can't feel anything.
Mm.
That's what that one's supposed to do. But that's the one that's about to go bad.
So when you're paralyzed, you can still feel pain.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
not paralyzed, like nerve paralyzed.
Okay.
But like if you're paralyzed in the sense that your body is in a state of paralysis, like, you know, if a bug with venom injects a bug or bites an animal or something and they become paralyzed, they still feel that they're dying,
but they just can't
move.
Right, right, right. Okay.
Yeah. The day before his execution, an interview Liddell did with the BBC network was released. In the interview, he said, "My dying words will always be as it has been. I am an innocent man." Liddell Lee was put to death on April 20th, 2017. And my whole thing is, again, I don't know whether Liddell Lee was innocent or guilty,
But when I get to the part that I'm about to get to about the new revelation that's happened over the last couple of days, if there was another person involved, or if it just was him, why keep the act up for 27 years?
Yeah.
That's my whole thing. He went through incompetent lawyers. Do you think this guy for 27 years was like, if I just get the right lawyer, I'm going to beat this shit. And I did it. You know what I mean? Like, that's where my brain goes. But I don't know. I don't know whether this guy's innocent or guilty. But what I do know, before I get to what I said, like I said, the most recent update, what I do know is if this guy had a competent defense, he probably would have beat this.
Yeah.
At the very least, he'd just be doing life in prison. At the very least, the death penalty would have been taken off the table. And that is a massive indictment on the criminal justice system and capital punishment in this country. My theory is that there's a second guy. My theory is that I think that maybe he was there, but he didn't kill her. But my whole, again, that goes back to what I said, which is like, why wouldn't he just say that?
Yeah.
Why would he be protecting this person 27 years later? She was bludgeoned with a tire hammer 36 times. There was blood all over the crime scene, and he didn't have any blood on him. He was picked up an hour later. He didn't have any blood on him. So how?
Yeah.
You know? So again, like beyond a reasonable doubt, I can't say this guy definitely killed this person. And that's the job of a court trial. And I think a competent defense lawyer would have been able to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt. You can't prove beyond a reasonable doubt that this guy did it. So he's innocent.
Yeah.
That's how court works. But it only works that way if you have the money to mount a proper defense. 4 years after the execution of Ladell Lee, lawyers affiliated with the Innocence Project and the ACLU say DNA testing has revealed that genetic material on the murder weapon, which was never previously tested, in fact belongs to another man. In a highly unusual development for a case in which a person has already been convicted and executed, the new genetic profile has been uploaded to a national criminal database in an attempt to identify the mystery man. The Innocence Project and the ACLU have pushed for additional DNA testing at previous times, including the eve of Mr. Lee's execution. The request was denied. A federal judge rejected Mr. Lee's request for a stay of execution, saying that he had simply delayed too long. So they're like, man, listen, you keep trying to live, and this is holding all this shit up, so that's the last. We're not listening to you anymore. The same way the lawyers were like, I'm tired of you trying to say you're innocent. I quit. You know what I mean? What a crazy thing to say. Like, this dude simply is just, he's delaying this. It's like, yeah, I don't want to die.
Yeah.
But they're not trying to hear that, man. In a statement, lawyers from the ACLU and the Innocence Project were cautious about stating what exactly could be extrapolated from the newly tested DNA from a shirt and from the murder weapon beyond the fact that both samples appeared to belong to the same man. And that man was not Ladell Lee. So again, they didn't want to say he didn't do anything. He wasn't there. They didn't want to say that. All they said was, we got blood on a shirt. We got blood on a weapon. The blood on both of those things don't belong to Deborah Reese. They belong to a different person. And that person is not Ladell Lee. That's what they've come out and said so far.
Yeah.
So again, that doesn't tell me, when you asked about the alibi, I don't know if they're saying, I don't know if this is a situation where it's like, Ladell Lee was 60 miles away at home sleeping in his bed when this happened. Mm. I don't know if that's the case. I don't know if Ladell Lee just wasn't doing anything. But they finally tested the blood. The blood flagged a person, and that person that it flagged was not Ladell Lee. So at the very least, Ladell Lee, this could be a situation like Making a Murderer where Brendan Dassey is a little slow, but they definitely killed that woman. And the uncle, I can't even remember that dude's name right now, so it's been so long. The main guy involved in Making a Murderer is like the ringleader, and Brendan Dassey is his accomplice. Mm. This could be a situation where maybe Ladell Lee was an accomplice to somebody who he trusted or told him we're going to go rob this house or something like that.
Again, I don't know. That's me speculating wildly. I don't know if that's true. My whole point is there's a third person, apparently, that's been flagged from testing the DNA on these weapons or on this weapon and on this shirt. And that third person is a mystery person, but it's not Liddell Lee.
So they don't know who it is.
They don't know who it is. They've put it into the federal database. So if somebody gets DNA ran and they identify that person, it'll go and get compared to the DNA from that crime scene. So it's to be decided. According to the Innocence Project, no physical evidence was ever produced that connected Mr. Lee to Miss Reese's murder. In a summary of the case, the group also outlined obstacles that Mr. Lee faced over the years, including a lawyer who was stumbling drunk and unprepared at court hearings, unreliable neighborhood eyewitnesses, and conflicts of interest for key players in the trial. All things that I mentioned, the affair, unreliable eyewitnesses, and a noticeably drunk attorney. Mm-hmm. Mr. Lee's first trial resulted in a hung jury. His second murder trial began on October 10th, 1995. 7 days just after what, Fran? What trial?
1995?
Yeah.
What, the OJ trial?
Exactly. His trial took place just 7 days after the OJ Simpson trial, in which he was acquitted of killing Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman. And if you remember, Fran, there's this really crazy compilation of they played the trial in Times Square. Everybody was filming because they knew it was a big deal that day. There was a lot of people filming all around the country. Mm-hmm. And you could see black people in black neighborhoods were throwing, we did it. And then white people were like, no,
yeah,
God, no. Like, it was like this parallel of emotions. Mm-hmm. That's where the country was. Racially split.
Yeah.
White people were like, this guy fucking killed these people and they just got away with it. And black people were like, yeah, fucking Rodney King, a whole bunch of shit that had nothing to do with O.J. Simpson. Yeah. But, like, we got one. That was the thing. But O.J. Simpson fucking killed those people.
Oh,
you know what I mean? But at the time, it was like, a black man, he beat the system. Like, that was the emotion. Like, finally, we won one. But it was the wrong one to beat.
You think he gonna come out on his deathbed and say he did it?
He already did, bro. Listen. Yeah. I don't know if
he got like books and shit, right?
I don't know if people know this. This is the funny. It's not funny, but it is. It is.
He had to come out up like straight for was like, I did it.
No, he was in. Yeah,
he played around with it.
He was in financial trouble, and in order to pay Ron Goldman's family, he did a book called "If I Did It," and he did an interview where the lady's asking him like, "Did you do this?" And he's like, "Well, I mean, listen. Let's just say, you know, I have a friend and this friend had a knife." And he goes in this roundabout thing. But at one point in that interview, he says, "I." Mm-hmm. And it's just a split second where you catch it or you don't. But it's like he was doing this hypothetical thing and he was talking about this friend and all this shit. And then for 1 second, he fucked up. And it's like, nah, that motherfucker did that. That was the moment I knew. When I saw, this was obviously years later after this whole thing had happened, this interview, I'm an adult now. Mm. But after I looked back and I saw that, I was like, motherfucker did that.
Yeah.
And also all the other evidence that it is that he did it as well. But my point is, that's where the world was. Racially divided. This black dude killed these two white people. He got away with it. It's fucking crazy. Now, Liddell Lee's on trial and he has to find a fair jury in that climate. I don't know. Maybe the O.J. Simpson trial affected the way people see race and this murder trial, and they're expected to be impartial about this Liddell Lee trial, and maybe they weren't. That's what the Innocence Project is posing. But maybe that has nothing to do with it, but it is a thought.
Yeah.
It's for sure a thought. 10 days after the O.J. trial, and then you go watch that video of fucking people in Times Square being like, no! Fucking tensions were pretty high.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Leslie Rutledge, the Arkansas Attorney General, said on this past Thursday that she was not swayed by the new developments, which is, of course, that's what she's going to say, because they're going to stick by each other because they're not going to admit to being wrong. Mm. What attorney general or district attorney or anything, who would do that? Admit that they got one wrong. Mm. They're going to fight that until it's like they get the most blatant, obvious evidence possible, like of the actual suspect. Until that happens, they're just going to say,
Yeah, we didn't test the evidence. That proves nothing. He was there. He did it.
Yeah.
That's what they're going to say until irrefutable evidence comes to their face. Anyway, just to wrap things up, the ghost of Liddell Lee has cast a spotlight on the criminal justice system and capital punishment and has re-sparked the age-old debate on whether or not an eye for an eye has any place in a civilized society. And if you believe that it does, how many innocent people are you comfortable with being murdered in the name of vengeance? So like I said, that was the story of Liddell Lee, a very complicated one. Like I said, there's a lot of gray in this case. I'm not saying that Liddell Lee didn't do anything wrong and you know, whatever, but he didn't get a fair trial. And there's a new suspect. Mm-hmm. And Liddell Lee's dead. So if he is innocent, he'll never be truly exonerated.
Yeah,
because he's dead. So, abolish the death penalty. Here's another example of that. You know, a new suspect has entered the chat, and Liddell Lee is dead.
Yeah.
So, no matter what his past was, or the things that he was convicted of during the trial, everybody deserves a fair trial. Period. A fair trial should not be dependent upon your bank account. And this is just one example of many in which that was the case. So, you know, as a country, we got to do better. Anyway, yeah, that was my affirmative murder, the case of Liddell Lee. Fran, are you ready to get into some good vibes?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do this. Fran, why don't you kick things off, man?
Yeah, so my good vibe this week. Now, the good vibe segment. I want to give you my opinions, right?
Okay.
So, I love the good vibe segment, right?
Yes, you've made that clear.
Yes, but some of the shit I find, it's like I want to do a good vibe, but some of the shit I go, I gotta bring this up because it's like it's either terrifying,
yeah, or it's crazy,
funny,
yeah,
or it's just like.
Unbelievable. Like giving money back when you find the $30,000 in some pants.
Yeah. Is it good vibe in that? Yes.
Sure. If you look at it that way, yeah. It's, right. It's about perception.
Exactly. This good vibe is about mm-hmm. NASA's mm-hmm. Perseverance rover touched down on Mars 2 months ago.
Yeah, yeah.
It did so with a helicopter attached to its belly. Now, the Ingenuity Mars helicopter has made history as the first to take a powered, controlled flight on another planet.
So they brought a helicopter with them.
Yes.
See that when my mind. Let me finish.
On April 19th, the chopper rose 3 meters above the floor of a crater, stayed afloat in the red planet's extremely thin red air for 39 seconds, then came down for a pinpoint landing. And its takeoff spot.
Uh-huh.
Okay. The 4-pound rotorcraft is being used as a demonstration to help determine whether future explorations.
Mm-hmm.
In bold letters, explorations.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
On Mars could include an aerial perspective.
Mm-hmm.
That means lots more flying tests
yep.
for this helicopter. Mm-hmm. On Friday, Ingenuity ascended to 5 meters, then was pushed to new limits. Flying south for 84 meters, passing over rocks and small craters, and taking photos the whole way.
Uh-huh.
That scares me.
Yeah. Oh, they're leaving us here. They are going to leave us here. Elon Musk and all those rich people.
Shit is wild,
Bill
man.
Gates just got divorced from his wife, so he's going to take a whole bunch of single girls with him on the thing. They are leaving us here. My first thought was that... They took that there for somebody. He's like, it's already somebody there. He's like, yeah, I need a chopper, man. I can't get to the Mars base.
It's
on
like
the
a
other
mini.
Side
it's like a mini helicopter.
Oh, okay, yeah, cool. Yeah, we said helicopter. I'm thinking the news chopper.
You know, like I said, I want this to be good vibes. But
sure. No, they're gonna leave
hearing
us.
Hearing shit like this is
that's
like
cool exploration and stuff. But like, this planet is gonna die at some point, and they're gonna leave us here.
Because at first it's like maybe like 20, 30 years ago that you know they had come up with some type of experiment where they just. They had like a small camera and they threw it,
mm-hmm.
fucking shot it out of a cannon or something so it could land uh-huh. on there and they can just do whatever.
Yeah, no,
they got shit flying and shit mm-hmm. going over there. It's like, man, I don't know. They gonna have suits soon. you can fucking survive. I don't even know, man. Damn. That shit is crazy.
They've been batting around the idea of flying some nuclear weapons up there because they think that if they drop some nuclear bombs, that'll unleash the water beneath the surface because Mars doesn't have water on the surface. Yeah. And they're thinking about, this is how fucking toxic and terrible human beings are. They're thinking about taking nuclear weapons to another planet and destroying that in the hopes to make it more suitable for us. That's the
to leave?
Some of us.
But I don't understand. Like, what's the... I just don't get it.
Why leave?
Just leave into a whole new planet and trying to rebuild everything?
This planet is dirty and disgusting and ruined.
So we got to move now. Mm-hmm. So we're already gone once this dies.
We got to prepare to move. All the people with the money and everything, so I can send my ancestors, my descendants and everything, we can get them there so they can set up capitalism and everything on that planet so they can be the people in charge there.
Yeah.
Instead of we all get there and it's like, we're all communists, man. We just all one. It's like, no. We want to make sure we get it all set up so that it's like, this is Gatesium.
Yeah.
Or this is Elon Muskium. This is not Mars anymore. My people founded this planet.
Yeah.
So you have to follow our rules here.
Yeah. So the pictures that you see is like, it's like you can just drop somebody there and it's just it's like here, but.
But red.
It's just nothing else there. It's still a sky.
Yeah, sure.
Still land. You can just walk. You can just go there and just walk.
It's like Arizona.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's the desert. It's like a fucking desert. Uh-huh. And that shit is wild, man. I just don't. Like I said, I want this to be good vibes, but that shit like that, man.
That shit's going to look like Vegas soon. Vegas used to look like a desert, too.
It's like. Seeing, it's like, I got some work I got to do.
Yeah, it'll be
so good. So I can send my fucking kids.
A lot of work to do.
Yeah. So I got to get them there.
It's going to be a fat burger on there soon. get all kind of stuff. Yeah.
I just think that's creepy, man. That's scary.
Oh yeah, bro. This shit is a wrap. My good vibe story is a little of this world, we'll say. It's a story about a lady who was apparently she was unaware that she was pregnant, which is I can't even fathom that. But she was unaware that she was pregnant and she went into labor on a flight.
I heard that before. We know somebody that happened to somebody.
That they didn't know they were pregnant or they got pregnant
they didn't know.
I'll tell you. Okay, cool. Some planes land late and others make it on time. But a recent flight from Salt Lake City to Honolulu is giving a whole new meaning to the term early arrival.
Nice.
When the plane took off, Lavania Lavi Munga was headed for a family vacation, but unbeknownst to even herself, that family was about to get one bouncing baby boy bigger. The soon-to-be mom had no idea she was already 29 weeks along. She said, "I just didn't know I was pregnant." And then Raymond, the baby... That's funny. That's a very, like, an adult name for a baby. Raymond.
That's one of those names where it's like...
a baby named Bruce.
Yeah. Raymond is one of, like... Roger, my dad's name, is just, like, one of those names where it's like, were you born an adult?
It's like a baby named that? Yeah, yeah. See, this is... this is my baby, Ruth. You're like, what? Call her something else. Put a Y, Ruthie, or so. I don't know.
The name has to age well. It has to work when they're babies. And
well, age is great. Like when you're 50,
but it has to work
when
you're a baby. It's like what?
You Raymond, baby Ray. That's like a 40-year-old hillbilly, Ray. Oh, anyway, baby Raymond, he just came out of nowhere, according to Munga. Halfway through the fateful trip, the crew had to make an announcement seeking out medical personnel to help with the emergency. Serendipitously, the passenger manifest included not only Hawaii Pacific Health physician Dr. Dale Glenn, but a trio of neonatal nurses Lanny Bamfield, Amanda Beating, and Mimi Ho, who all work at Missouri's North Kansas City Hospital. I guess maybe they were going on vacation or maybe I don't know. Probably not. They had to be on like some kind of medical
all together.
Like a conference. Or
that'd
something.
Be crazy.
Yeah, like we all just coincidentally work at the same hospital.
That'd be cool though. Like superheroes, they just team up.
Hell yeah, that'd be cool.
That'd be cool as hell. That's crazy.
But I think they had to be going on a medical conference to Hawaii or something. Without proper neonatal equipment, Dr. Glenn and the nurses had to come up with some creative solutions to keep baby Raymond stable for the remainder of the 3-hour flight. Thanks to a mixture of wilderness training and ingenuity involving shoelaces, microwaved warming bottles, and an Apple Watch heartbeat monitor, the newborn made it to Hawaii in good form. Dr. Glenn was quoted as saying, "I don't know how a patient gets so lucky to have three neonatal intensive care nurses on board the same flight when she is in emergency labor, but that was the situation we were in." The great thing about this was the teamwork. Everybody jumped in together and everybody helped out. Passenger Julia Hansen captured the blessed event for posterity with a TikTok video that includes a rousing round of applause for mom, baby, and her medical guardian angels, and has been seen more than 15 million times by viewers around the world. If I was the mom, I'd be like, I don't give you permission to get clout off of my pregnancy. If anything, give me the video. I'll make a TikTok, and me and Raymond can get some streams or whatever.
But that's crazy how the news is like, it's like a secondhand. TikTok,
yes.
Like, news gets it after social media gets older.
Oh, yeah. It's like, today, a really beautiful moment happened on TikTok. Yeah. Like, that's the source for the news. It's TikTok. When the plane touched down, it was met on the tarmac by a medical response team who whisked the mother and son to Kapi'olani Medical Center for women and children. As a preemie, Raymond was placed in their neonatal intensive care unit, where it's reported he's doing just fine. Since his birth was unexpected, in lieu of a baby shower, Munga's sisters have set up a GoFundMe campaign to help with the expenses of their nephew's unticketed entrance into the world.
Now you gotta stay there for a while, right?
Yeah, especially with COVID and everything. I don't know. It's pretty complicated. But anyway, the GoFundMe is up to $13,000. Their goal is $20,000. We know how expensive it can be to take care of a baby, especially when you aren't prepared for anything. No cribs or stuff like that. So the GoFundMe is Lavi's Airborne, L-A-V-I apostrophe S, Airborne Baby. So get on over to there and, you know, donate what you got, man. Let's help. Let's make sure that for her and Raymond to, you know, have everything that they need.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a very beautiful story and an unexpected one. And I can't wait till we finish, wrap this up so I can find out who the hell we know that didn't know they was pregnant. I didn't know we knew anybody that I didn't know that I was, that was something I was so close to.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we get out of here, podcast suggestions, TV show suggestions. Do I have any of those? Well, I just started Chasing Cosby.
Okay, the podcast.
Actually, I think I finished it. I might have one more left.
Okay. Yeah, man.
It's a nasty man, man.
I was like,
it's like, I knew, you know, you hear the stories, but then when you hear the tactics and
that's
stuff,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you're like, when you hear about the, find out the, like, his technique and things that he was doing to, yeah, like, get ingratiated into their family and stuff, it was just, it was really sick. Like,
hey, am I being recorded? No.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Okay, well, look.
Listen, I'll send her to college. I was like, this is nasty. It was very.
Jesus.
That's a nasty guy, man. But other than Chasing Cosby, I'm still watching Exterminate All Brutes on HBO. I'm very, very much a proponent of HBO Max these days, man. They got a lot of good shit on there. Like I said,
they got too much good shit on there for me.
Yes, you'll never be able to watch all the stuff, but there's never a such thing as too much good stuff.
Yeah.
It's always good. I'm always a fan of good stuff. So you're not going to be able to catch everything, but you know to add it to your list.
Yeah.
So I've been watching Mayor of Easton. That's me and Sierra's new show. That's what we watch together. So maybe, okay, we'll watch one after we finish recording. That's me and her, me and her's together show.
Mm-hmm.
Kate Winslet, great cast. It's true crime, but also kind of like Shameless. It's this weird combination of like Shameless and True Detective or something. It's crazy. Really been enjoying that anyway. But other than that, I don't really have anything else. Like I said, Chasing Cosby has been preoccupying my time when I'm not home.
Yeah.
And Mayor of Easton and Exterminate All Brutes. And I finished Invincible, that cartoon on Amazon Prime. That was good. Some good stuff, man. Mayor of Easton, though, is really good. I think, you know, we're a true crime podcast. I think people really enjoy that show. Highly recommend Mayor of Easton. You'll never watch it, obviously, but that's fine.
No.
Anything you have been watching for?
Before I get to the recommendations, I just want to give a shout out to you for holding the podcast down for this episode.
Oh,
because
yeah,
my story, yeah. I guess I did the story a year ago.
Yeah.
But I did it in a different way. That was probably better than the last time I did it.
Yes.
Which... The stuff I had didn't remind me of the story until, right, you brought it up. I was like, God damn it. But next week, I'm going to bring it next week. But anywho, as far as recommendations,
I forgot the damn title of the show. with Forrest Whitaker's in it. It's called
Godfather of Harlem.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't even started that.
I started watching that. Yeah, I like it.
One episode.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I've been meaning to watch that too because I like Forrest Whitaker. He's a good actor, so I've been meaning to watch that. But I was like, I can't do two Snowfalls if they felt like the same kind of thing. And I was like,
that show is one of those shows where I gotta do my research. I gotta go. Who is
this guy? Oh, yeah.
Malcolm X pops up and it's like, oh.
Yeah.
No, actually, I'm more ahead of one.
It's not Nicky Barnes, right? Who is he? Frank Lucas? Who is he?
Who?
Frank, who the Godfather of Harlem. Who is?
I can't remember his name.
Whoever he is, like, they were doing big things.
Yeah. But it was like,
that's why I was thinking it was Frank Lucas. Like, oh, Malcolm X?
All the other people pop up. Like, I gotta go. My dad Marie. I gotta go. Who is this?
Yeah.
And pop up and go. Oh, this is this person.
Got it.
Okay.
I don't think it's Frank Lucas.
No, I don't think it is. Either.
It might be the guy who Frank Lucas apprenticed. Because there's a guy he talks about in American Gangster, which is a very underrated gangster movie. Denzel Washington's character, he's a real person. Frank Lucas like came up under a guy, and I think he might have came up under this guy who's the Godfather of Harlem. I think. But I can't remember. Anyway, what I was about to say was, when you bring up what happened in this episode.
You talking about who Forrest Whitaker plays?
Yeah.
Bumpy Johnson.
Bumpy Johnson. Yeah. That's who Frank Lucas came up under Bumpy Johnson.
Yep.
But anyway, what I was saying was, you know, in response to what you said about this episode, you actually bring up a very good point, which is something that we'll talk about off air more. There was a discussion on Twitter about people listening to first episodes of podcasts The Vanishing is a very popular podcast, and they put up somebody emailed them like, I listened to the first episode of this podcast and it was dog shit. I hated it. This whole thing. And they're like,
people don't gotta be assholes though.
You don't have to be rude. Christ. Also, it's like, listen to the most new one. You see that it's episode 647 is out, right? Why go to episode one? And it's fine to judge it, but like to go and write something.
Yeah.
When you know there's a one, you know that was from 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Anyway, my point is, somebody responded who was from another popular podcast, so I don't remember right now. They said they went back and redid old episodes and called it like a remastered episode.
When you brought you saying that, I was thinking about earlier today. I was like, I kind of wanted to do my story of my favorite story, which was
Harrison Graham.
Harrison Graham.
Yeah.
I was thinking about redoing that, but I wanted to run the bayou first because I was thinking about that the other
we
day.
We should just
like,
go back.
But
that would take more, because the way I'm picturing it is, we go back, we record, basically, we just do the episode.
Yeah.
Or we just do the story.
Yeah.
And keep the banter in, and then I can just edit in, like, with some, like, hey, guys, so, you know, this is a remastered episode, and this is, we did this story again.
Yeah.
I did Michelle Blair again. But we keep all the raw, fun, inside jokes from earlier, but then at the parts where we take a break, we just come in with a better version of the story that we told with new research and whatever. So, you know, maybe.
I did a lot of work on my story this week. That's why I was going to say, I was like, God, because I know for a fact that the way I did it this week was better than the last time that I did it.
That's why I didn't
remember all the details and how I did it.
Because you didn't tell them before.
God damn it.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's something we'll consider.
Maybe
that'll be something we go back and do. I think that'll be a fun way to, you know, give people some new content, revamp things. And also I think that if we did that, it would take time, obviously. It would be a lot of episodes. But if we did that, it would be kind of this thing where it would be confronting a lot of insecurities that I have about the podcast because the equipment sucked and we were kind of finding our legs. If we go back and kind of put our now 2021 energy into some old stuff, I think I'd feel better about those old episodes.
Yeah.
So maybe that's something we'll do. Let us know what you guys think. Maybe comment in the Facebook group, send us some tweets, email us. Let us know if you think that would be a cool idea. Anyway, this has been another episode of Affirmative Murder. I've been Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner in true crime, Franco Evans. And we'll see you guys next week.
Deuces.